Welcome to the Let's Talk Energy podcast from EnergyNet. This series was recorded at the Africa Energy Forum 2024 in Barcelona, Spain. Join us for these and other episodes as we talk to the industry players, stakeholders, and rising stars of Africa's energy sector.
So, my name is Thuso Xola Kwadi, and I'm a project finance transactor at the Standard Bank Group. But yeah, we have Qi Rauleke from Pellegrin, and we'd just like to know more about you, your company, and like what you stand for. So I guess my first question is, who is Qi? Yeah,
so Qi Rauleke is the actual way to pronounce my name. Thank you for having me. As an individual, I am now a father of two, happily married. Professionally, I started off my career at JP Morgan Chase. Subsequently, worked at Standard Bank in their acquisition and leverage finance. It was actually around this point in late 2008, beginning 2009, when personally, I started getting disillusioned with my contribution as an investment banker in SA Inc. And I say that not to belittle the contribution of investment bankers, but I was always consciously mindful that my net contribution and net impact would be better served in the real economy. And moving from an international investment bank like JP Morgan and joining a local bank like Standard Bank, where I remember my first day at Standard Bank, I walked in to Simmons Street and I saw a floor of incredibly talented people of color. During my entire tenure at JP Morgan, and just for context, then the Morgan office had about 100 or so people. So you could imagine that the number of people of color weren't as large. So first day at Standard Bank, I see thousands of smart people of color. And what that moment meant to me was SA Inc. is in the right hands. And I need to make sure that I find my right role in SA Inc., be that in an investment bank or in the real economy. And my tenure at Standard Bank was instrumental in what ended up happening in the now Billy Green Energy story, because it was actually through my time at Standard Bank when I'd moved over to the debt side of the world where I was first exposed to renewable energy. Not through projects then, because in 2009 there were no renewable energy projects, but I was fortunate that I was sitting on the debt side of the world at a time where renewable energy was burgeoning, it was growing, and randomly I would hassle all my seniors to have renewable energy training for the guys. Because I personally could see what was coming. I had personal friends who we were starting to explore thoughts around what else we could do. And those initial training sessions that Standard Bank facilitated led to more advanced research personally that got me to a point by the end of 2009 where I had figured that my actual contribution into SA Inc. would be best placed and better served in the real economy through the creation of Billy Green Energy.
Oh, very nice. I think that's very forward thinking. 2009, no one was really thinking about it, and you're in the forefront to say that, okay, this is where the economy is going, this is how I want to contribute, and I see energy as an enabler in the economy, and I want to be there. And then you started Billy Energy, right? Tell us about Billy Energy.
Well, and when I appreciate the views of being forward thinking, but I'd be remiss in not identifying the real why behind Billy. So Billy Energy Group is an organization that was founded by five young Africans. We were young 15 years ago. it doesn't feel right to stop saying young, but the biggest driver behind us was the conscious awareness and understanding of the relative privilege that we had as five young black individuals. Yeah. And I'll give you context. I mean, personally, I grew up in Pimville in Soweto and Zone 7. And the people who all lived on my side of the street, we all went to private schools. The guys who lived directly behind me were more reflective of living in Soweto in the 80s. And the five of us as founders all had similar stories where it wasn't wealth we were born into, but a higher relative privilege than the rest of African South Africans, right? If I look at my direct story, my mother was fortunate enough to have gone to a school in the KZN called Marion, which was the equivalent of a private school for Black people that was in creation then. And if I just look at her relative privilege that led to my relative privilege, and when we came together as the five of us, we understood that what we had accessed in the form of a higher proportion of the gains from the liberalization that came in 1994, we were compelled to share that. And that awareness and what we were compelled to share is what we've coined or termed the justice dividend, which is merely us saying, from the gains of the liberalization that happened and democratization that happened in South Africa, not everyone benefited in equal proportion. And our why was to share that justice dividend. Our initial emphasis and focus at Billy and how we were going to share that justice dividend was to specifically focus on youth regeneration. Being professionals who worked in the investment bank and in corporate South Africa, we could see the type of Africans that the Black, that the banks wanted, right? If I look at my case, everyone, I worked with at JP Morgan, they went to all of the top schools in South Africa, they were at UCT, they all sound like somehow what I sound, and we were, let me not say we were, that is not a reflection of SA. That is not a reflection of the populace of South Africa. And when we set about to start Billy, our initial question was, how do we equip young people to be better prepared to firstly take the right subjects to go into university, and then from university to be best placed to end up in the right corporate spheres which would catapult their careers? And we spent about a year or two working with municipalities, developing models and programs directed or molded in this form. And it was through this work we were doing with municipalities where we actually came across an opportunity to take what was our social model and plug it into a landfill gas to energy project in Asmara, Eritrea. We and the sole connection we had to that project was someone we had went to university with was now working in Italy and working on this landfill gas to energy project. And if you would recall, and you're quite young, so you may not recall this, but around 2009, the United Nations had a program that was structured to incentivize the rollout of renewable energy. And that was through carbon credits. So projects then had two things to prove to access carbon credits. You either had to show additionality, and additionality is in the form of a social economic program or model in the environment of the power plant, or you had to show that the power plant wouldn't be profitable without those carbon credits. So it was this social aspect that led this Italian developer to reach out to us to create a social program and a product for their bid in Asmara. As fate would happen, that project didn't win, but the significance of that moment was it presented to us the first opportunity where we could see our why in terms of bringing about structural change and development in young lives can be coupled with a power plant that is renewable, and we'd be able to, in essence, generate 20-year long-term cash flows to direct back into our very why of youth regeneration and structural change. And that moment for us, in essence, was, as we would say, the stars aligning, our why being combined with an actual means of financing our why, right? Because it's all good and well to have noble aspirations, yeah. want to bring about structural change, but if you can't finance that, if there's no capital base yeah. to underpin it, none of that would happen.
It's a beautiful story. So you sort of got rewarded for wanting to make a social impact in society, the world, I don't know, Mother Earth, whoever you believe in, gave you this opportunity. They gave you this opportunity because they saw that, oh, these people are making a really positive change in society. Let's give them this. And yeah, and then it then allowed you to plow back into what you wanted to do initially. Okay, I think let's get back to the more structural stuff. I want to go to the more structural stuff. For all of this to happen, what is needed is money, right? And we saw that in December, you got some funding from the IDC, Nedbank, and Norfund. I think it was 132 million or 2.5 billion rands. Tell us what your thinking was behind that when you got the news and what it enables you to do.
Perfect. I think the first thing to almost just highlight is the reality we lived in before that, right? We yeah. were fortunate in that the facility we closed that you referenced was in essence our second series of a hold core funding facility.
Yeah.
Our first one we closed in 2020, and that was about just short of $30 million. The dynamic that every developer or IPP in South Africa or on the continent actually deals with is you typically finance the equity you need for your project on a ring-fenced project-by-project basis. In the earlier rounds when we started in REAP, that worked. But as we progressed, as the rounds progressed, as the demands grew, raising capital on a project-by-project basis, one-by-one basis, ended up being time-consuming, not efficient,
yeah.
and from a cost perspective or cost of financing, extremely inefficient,
yeah.
right? Because we had now, if I just look at 2020, then we were about near 10 years into the Billy story. We had built up by that point the balance sheet or portfolio of near just over a gigawatt.
Yeah.
We now sit at over 2 gigawatts, but at that first platform stage, we had a gigawatt and we were still not using that gigawatt to access more financing.
Yeah.
So any bank we deal with would in essence ignore the value sitting at the top.
And yeah.
that was what we sought to rectify when we raised our facility with Nedbank, IDC, and Norfund. It was this clear, conscious targeting of pooling our entire portfolio of assets and realizing that as we were moving up the value chain, and when I say value chain, we started as an investor into these power plants and we worked on the social model, as I had illustrated
yeah.
earlier, but we were always clear that we want to move up the value chain. Our long term was
yeah.
always to be an IPP that develops, owns, and operates in its own right.
Yeah.
Right? We were very clear that we were heeding the call of our sovereign. When the state liberalized energy,
yeah.
it was to ensure an alternative to Eskom, ensure security of supply, but as important to ensure that there are local agents involved in that security of supply. So
mm.
we're always clear that for us, whilst we started off as minority shareholders, the target was always to be a lead sponsor.
Yeah.
And the facility we closed with Nedbank, IDC, and Norfund played an instrumental and pivotal role in pioneering or pushing us in that direction to being a lead sponsor.
Yeah.
We, or through the use of those proceeds, we've directed it into our first PGE-led, and as things stand, 100% owned PGE projects,
wow.
which we bid in a competitive process for
yeah.
one of the largest trading commodity houses in the world. We're successfully labeled preferred bidders, and we're now in the process of closing those projects. The first 100 megawatts is weeks away,
yeah.
and the second 100 megawatts will close in the third quarter of this year. That's the first 200 megawatts. We also used some of those proceeds to direct into a portfolio of assets that's being developed by what can be recognized as the largest energy trader in South Africa now, mm-hmm. which has ultimate offtakes from a few platinum mines.
Yeah.
And we closed those projects in November last year. The last set of projects I must also identify, which we financed through this facility, was the much delayed Round 5 projects. Those were delayed for about a 2-year process.
Yeah.
And I must take this moment to almost identify the strength of our partnership with ENGIE in closing those projects. Those for us were our first set of projects in the state program where our shareholding was closer to a 50-50 shareholding.
Yeah.
And that showed, in essence, the one, that development of Billy as an entity, but the acceptance of the market of what the state has put in place, right? Our partnership with ENGIE was the first in the form of multinationals no longer just looking at Billy as a junior partner that will sit in the corner and tick a box. And without the facility, those strides, those progresses, those movements we've made would be a lot more difficult, if not near impossible. You highlighted a key fact, which is we are in a capital intensive game, and my ability to access capital at cheaper rates is a main driver in why I would win a project over anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, those terms count, right? It's very important. And you know what? I was listening to you and was thinking about how big of an impact Billy Green has created in society, and how no one thinks of Billy Green as a small player in the market anymore. Like, I work for Standard Bank, so when we think Billy Green, we think of a lead sponsor, not someone who's gonna be a 5% stakeholder in an SPV. So I'm very happy about that. But now, going back to your initial roots of plowing back into society, we just saw that you got awarded a sustainability award for the second time. And I just want to know, like, when you guys heard that news, what was going through your heads?
And before I answer that question, I missed answering what was going through our head as we closed the NetBank North Under 90C facility. I would be very remiss in not saying the level of pride isn't the right word, but humility,
mm-hmm.
right? When you realize, and I'll speak in rand sense here, raising 2.5 billion rand is not a small feat. You're an investment banker. I was an investment banker. I worked on deals that were of this nature and of this size, and the people behind those deals were incredibly successful businessmen who built incredible organizations. So to find ourselves in a position where that was the sort of capital we were raising was probably the most humbling moment for me personally and the collective as founders, right? It was humbling and a big confirmation and a big affirmation of what the state had put in place. The state was clear in that it needed to see SA and local agents. And when you had a commercial bank like NetBank, a multinational DFI like Norfund, local DFI like IDC, all coming together saying SA Inc. from a regulatory perspective and a policy perspective, you put in place something that created a local agent that's 100% Black South African, that we are now saying we'll put 2.5 billion behind to ensure that this player dominates the sector and punches above its, actually, and I'll use what you've said in that it's no longer above its weight, but punches fairly with the people that it competes with. And when you consider who we compete with, these are multinationals, is not fair to say. These are government-owned companies. If you look at all the big foreign players in SA, the bulk of them are either heavily state-owned or heavily state-funded. right? So 100%. To be in a position where we could direct two DFIs and the leading commercial bank to back what was essentially 15 years ago, aspirations, hopes, and dreams, however grounded, however well-intentioned, of five young individuals from Soweto, from Daveyton, from Bloemfontein, from Tabanchu. I there's no words to explain that other than saying what you said, right? When you take your purpose and you align it with a bigger purpose, whoever you believe in or whatever moves you shows up.
Yeah.
But if I now go back to your now question of winning the Presidential Sustainability Award for the second year in a row, that gives you a similar but different sense of humility and pride, because this is us now not being acknowledged because we're solely IPPs able to develop projects at competitive prices and close them.
Yeah.
This is us being acknowledged for our why. And this is us being acknowledged for our why by not only our peers, but the state itself. That for me is probably the most critical acknowledgement that as Billy we could have ever had, because why we exist is to partner with the state. The power we provide used to be a service that was solely in the realm of the state. The state asked for assistance in the provision of energy, we put our hand up. The state is looking for what we're looking for, structural change in the lives of South Africans en masse. And when you look at how renewable energy was structured, the provision of energy was central, but underpinning it was all of the national development objectives of SA Inc. Make sure that there's a South African player there, make sure that there's a Black South African player there, and make sure that the community is involved.
Yeah.
As Billy, the work we do not only provides power, but also addresses structural change in the environments of our power plants. Yeah. And through Knowledge Billy, we implement at the first phase, research-led development, where we go into a community, do a baseline assessment, understand what skills are there, and what skills can be augmented with the introduction of the revenue that the power plants will bring, will provide. We then also preoccupy ourselves with the NDP targets and we localize them.
Yeah.
We look at a community and we say, which of these targets can we apply in this geography? And then we direct the capital that we must from the power plants. We crowd in further capital from our financing partners. And I'll mention in Dosrefier in particular, we've got a hydroponic farm that was established there through grant funding that we're able to source from our partners IDC, our partners at Investec, that we've managed to use those proceeds as means to not only develop the hydroponics farm, but also used as the community's contribution in the hydroponics farm itself, right? And if you look at Dosrefier, it's an agricultural community. So it made sense that we, one, identified the skills there, but instead of bringing them agriculture as they knew it, we introduced a more forward-looking form of agriculture in hydroponics, because this is the way of the future in the form of water efficiency and just heightening your crop production. We, if you move outside of just the hydroponics farm in Dosrefier also, which was our first asset and probably the community will always use as a case point, in that community, almost all of the schools that are there have solar power now. We've trained over in, now if I look over into the Mpumalanga region, we've trained over 100 learners in renewable energy programs. We've also trained over 15 TVET college lecturers. And what's interesting is that now one of those lecturers has actually been recognized as a leading national instructor within the renewable energy space. So for us, getting that award and that recognition for the second time in a row was really bringing home, our why, and really aligning us further with the state in the form of us knowing that the work we do is being acknowledged by them.
Yeah, interesting. I just have an additional question to what you said. How will you know that you've made it? Like, what needs to happen? Do you think that you will ever get to a point where you feel like we've made it as Billy Green?
So I love that question. And I'll almost take a step back and say, Billy Green Energy is the 100% renewable energy arm of Billy Energy Group. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned our sister company, which is Knowledge Billy, which mm-hmm. does the least research-led, call it development, in the environments of our power plants. So you have these two subsidiaries within the group, and as an individual and as the one of the five founding founders of Billy, our measure of success is not the gigawatts that we have. It's going to be the lives we reach on the ground through Knowledge Billy. I'll tell you a personal story of mine. About 3 years ago, I walked past a taxi that was filled with people inside. And for a moment, I couldn't remember the feeling of being in a taxi myself. And this was a mode of transport that from the age of like 3 till 27 that I used every day. And that moment hit me hard because it just showed me how quickly one's progress and one's relative improvement in life can remove them from the rest of their populace and their society. And that's a big why for us, right? We don't look at the commercial of the financial success that we can enjoy as individuals and decouple that from the socioeconomic gains and structural change that's needed. Yeah. This feeds into everything we do at Billy, right? We 2 years ago, introduced our first non-founder into our share ownership scheme. Mm-hmm. And this year, just a few weeks ago, actually, we've launched our first broader share employee ownership scheme within Billy. And I'm just identifying these 2 points to say, just as founders, commercially, any success that Billy enjoys has to be success that's enjoyed. And not just, and I'm going to use the analogy that you would appreciate as a banker, not just through a bonus, right? We didn't leave corporate South Africa to set up something that would only involve people through high bonuses, right? We set up something that would meaningfully involve people in the creation of what we're doing and in the sharing of any wealth that comes from it. If we go now outside of our structures at Billy, the work we do in our communities is only going to be measured by its impact. And time will be that measure. When we go into Dosafir and all of our host communities, what we will be looking for as a measure of success is in each of our host communities, we've got NDP targets. Mm-hmm. All of our initiatives are targeted and driven towards those NDP targets. I'll speak to one measure. Will all of our host communities have access to clean running water, electricity, and internet services? Will all of our host communities have at least a minimum household earning income of above 100,000 rand? Because currently, 80% of our host communities have zero income. Will our host communities have access to opportunities that can change their lives? Those are meaningful targets that you can measure and look at. And whilst in 5 years or within the next 5 years, we say we're targeting to have 5 gigawatts that's operating, as essential are the 5 NDP communities that we are targeting. So in the next 3 years, when you and I meet, mate, it'll be GQ or Grid. You have the 5 gigawatts and you have the 5 NDP communities.
Yes.
And let's have a discussion about that, because it cannot just be the gigawatts. It has to be the lives on the ground, because that is why we exist.
inspiring, really inspiring. I wish you all the best in that. I know it's no small feat, but I know that you guys can definitely pull it off. You also mentioned that you're a father of two kids, and if I ask my mother, I have four siblings. If I ask my mother who her favorite kid was, she'd not be able to answer that. But I want to pose that to you in terms of your projects.
I love that. For a moment, I was worried. Then,
Do you have a project that you're particularly excited about?
So, and I think, and please draw no parallel to the initial analogy of kids use, right? But there's something very special about your first project. Exceptionally special. I'll tell you the backstory, actually, about our first project. Before December 2011, when the first preferred bidders from the REAP program were announced, 2 months before, and I'll just have to name the name of the founders, Obakeng, Tabelo, Fumani, and Bubilo, myself, are sitting scenario planning. It's been now 2 years with us out of corporate South Africa. Yeah. Whatever savings or bonuses we still had from our previous lives as bankers, all depleted. Mm. Parents disillusioned with us. Yeah. And we were at the point where we were now saying, what will we do to keep this thing alive? And out of the various plans we had, some were saying, we'll go back into corporate South Africa so some can continue. And I put this backdrop to almost say, this was what was happening, or these were the permutations leading up to what was the first round of projects to be announced. So when we were then successfully announced as one of the first 28 ever bidders who would get the license to build a power plant, that moment was in essence a level of, and joy is not the right word, but I'll almost use an analogy one of my friends gave me, another investment banker friend of mine. I worked with JP Morgan, and he was around us at that point in time and had the benefit of seeing the relief, the joy, the pride of what that moment meant to us. And he actually said to me, GQ, you probably will not ever experience a moment like this ever again in your life. And he was extremely privileged, had an incredible lifestyle. And his response to me was, that feeling you have is a feeling I've never known, and a feeling that very few of my privileged friends have, because you guys have created something and you got that breakthrough, right? And I'm spending a long time in almost explaining why our first project was so special, right? This is a 36 megawatt concentrated photovoltaic project, which we started off as a 35% shareholder in. Our entrance into that project was solely to develop the social construct and hold a minority shareholding. But over time, and with our clear intention of why we sat as a minority partner, we learned how to develop a project. We backward engineered how to develop a project, right? Because once it was at financial close, we then looked at everything that came before. We then had the opportunity of sitting alongside the managers and operators of this asset. And we were paying attention to every single thing they did well and not so well, because we were clear that we wanted to take over the management of that power plant. And within 5 years of that power plant being in operation, we took over the asset management. That was the first step. And a year or two later, we then took outright control of that power plant. And it stands as a special project to us because that was the first asset where we demonstrated, one, our full value offering and our ability to move up the curve and realize our actual objective, which is to stand as a lead sponsor. And behind that was the first time SA Banks affirmed that, because the acquisition of the 20% shareholding that we didn't have had to be financed by an SA Bank. And that facility was financed by Investec, whilst at the same time, RMB provided a refinance of our 35% shareholding. Mm-hmm. So if I look at that point in time in 2020, you had two of the leading commercial banks in South Africa saying, Billy, we'll refinance your existing shareholding, and we're backing you to take control of this asset. For those reasons, that first asset of ours has been our guinea pig. We've used it to test all of our programs under Knowledge Billy. And from there, we then rolled those out to other projects, other geographies. I mean, I'll just touch on, from the work that Knowledge Billy did in Dos Lafid, they were able to take that exact same model, that hydroponics farm, and share that in Costa Rica. From the work that they were doing in Dos Lafid, they were selected as an SED partner for Coldplay. And these are incredibly humbling achievements that we've realized, which we would not have had we not had that first project, tested it, used it as our case in point, and taken those learnings into what is now the model, right? Without CPV1, we wouldn't be standing here looking to close a project that we hold 100% for one of the largest trading commodity houses.
Now, as a member of the youth, I am truly inspired and humbled by your story and you being so vulnerable with us. But I'd also like to ask you another question. What would you say to members of the youth who would want to get into energy?
I think the first thing I would say to them, and I'll tell you this anecdotal joke we still tell amongst the founders. Bilo, myself and Obakeng were standing outside Simmons Street at that Total Garage, and Bilo and Obakeng were like, Chika, come on now, you have to leave now, you have to resign. And like, in 3 months, mate, we will have solved everything.
Yeah.
This was in 2009. Up until 2020, that near 10-year process was, to say it simply, filled with all of the things that form character, and things that form character tend to not come with lots of money. Mm-hmm. So when I look at any young person who wants to come into energy, the first thing I would say is that it's not glamorous. It's not quick. It has long lead times. You deal with every form of bureaucracy you can think of. But, there can be no more rewarding act or service that any person can have than in service to their community and their society. And if you look at what energy is, I mean, you spoke of energy as an enabler, right? The provision of energy is the first thing that unlocks any society, any community, and any environment. And the language and narrative we use internally at Billy is, we are essential services workers. We do not have the luxury to view ourselves in any other form. I tell the team that they need to look at themselves just like teachers, just like police, just like the people who do not have the luxury to strike, because we bring light to the world. And I can't think of any other or better objective for a young person to preoccupy themselves with than bringing light into the world.
Completely agree. And AEF 2024, how has it been and what are you still looking forward to?
So, I mean, this AEF has been extremely special from a Billy perspective, right? I think it's been the culmination of our 15-year narrative, right? If I look at this conversation I'm having with you, on the opening night, our head of development was fortunate enough to be one of the people delivering a keynote address. If I look at the broader team, I've been on a panel, our CFO was in a closed room discussion. We're one of the sponsors of AEF. this has been for us probably the most important AEF because it's shown our organic development and our organic growth. And we've loved the partnership with AEF because at each time we've had a project, at each time we've had a milestone, we've shared that with AEF. And AEF has almost embraced the Billy narrative and embraced the Billy story. I think probably, and not to go back to the last AEF, but what I loved about the AEF in Kenya and the YES and the youth focus, with our comms team, we spend so much time with Shadika and the team in helping them develop how it should be structured, yeah. Right? And for us, again, going back to our youth focus, our youth regeneration, that was so special to do, right? Yeah. So I look at this AEF and I look at how Billy's been engaging, how Billy's been involved. It's been extremely, extremely beneficial from several perspectives, right? One, highlighting the fact that we are now 15 years later, highlighting the fact that we now are a lead sponsor, highlighting the fact that there is a template that can be followed for new entrants, right? And with all of these things, you then interact and make connections in a completely different way.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the joys of AEF is its unique ability to bring about all these stakeholders from all around the world into one environment where our normal daily lives don't interfere. This is probably the only conference I've been in where I have ministers walking past me and you grab that minister and you can actually speak to a minister, right? So it's extremely, extremely rare to find yourself in a place where from a regulatory perspective, your equipment manufacturers, your developers, your equity investors, the number of DFIs that are here, the number of financial institutions, all stakeholders in one place having meaningful engagements with the clear objective of making Africa Inc. brighter, led by African solutions. I couldn't be more excited and more thankful at the opportunity that as an organization we've had to partner with AEF.
Thank you, Mr. Klee. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to seeing you 2025 AEF on home ground, South Africa, and potentially before and after that too. So, thank you.
Thank you, my good man.
Sure.
Thank you too.
This series was recorded at the Africa Energy Forum 2024 in Barcelona, Spain. Join us for these and other episodes as we talk to the industry players, stakeholders, and rising stars of Africa's energy sector.